with their generosity, ingenuity, and a large dose of civility, they gave to this community a cultural heart that will beat for many years to come. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. I am Chrissy Hewitt. Issues and Ideas continues now with Ears on Art. This twice-monthly, half-hour program is devoted to the exploration of the visual arts and is produced here at KCBX Public Radio by Stephen DeLuque and me. Today, we continue our tribute, begun last week, to Myron and Priscilla Graham. We thought it wise to begin today with a short refresher about some of the many accomplishments of this amazing couple.
Myron served on the city council and was one of the champions who saw through the development of Mission Plaza. He was also a driving force on the expansion of the San Luis Obispo Art Center, now museum. Priscilla was active in the League of Women Voters and a strong supporter of the architecture preservation movement in San Luis Obispo. Much of what makes San Luis Obispo unique can be attributed to the visions and the respectful persistence of these two people. We now continue with our tribute to Myron and Priscilla Graham.
Our guests are Kevin O'Connor, Gail Johnson, Jim Carl, and Robert Graham. Speaking of the Art Museum, Art Center, certainly for when Myron and Priscilla were actively a part of it, actually Art Association, because that's the name under which it began. And I believe that we're both of them, or certainly your father, one of the founding members. And eventually it became known to everybody as the Art Center, so I was on the board of directors when that name got changed. An interesting kind of dynamic, I think, between Arnie Nyback, who was the volunteer curator there for close to 30 years, and so he had a kind of ownership recognition factor that was going on in terms of how he was selecting the work and everything to go there. But Myron was always in the background getting the things done. I have very fond memories of his saying, "Yes, I'll help you clean out the storeroom," which nobody else wanted to do, and people were afraid to throw out something because it might be valuable. And he and I just had a great time a couple different times, just heaving stuff out of that room. And it was a room that he had actually helped build when they remodeled, and he had put in a loft area and everything. So it was always my awareness, whether it was there or, again, with the Unitarian Fellowship or working with him through the advisory committee at KCBX, you always knew that if you needed somebody to do something, Myron was going to step up to the plate to assist in the background, whatever it was. Didn't have to be a famous spotlight part. He was going to be there.
I think the Art Center started probably in the 50s.
Right.
And they used to have it at the rec center here in town. And that was kind of a community project.
That was a community project, and certainly as I heard the story, I mean, getting the building and then basically paying for it in those days, more or less with bake sales. This was not a huge donor project. This was by the seat of the pants getting it done.
It was a labor of love. I mean, there was a tremendous amount of dedication of people in the arts community who wanted to see this come true. And that, to me, was far more important, was the fact that we had these group of completely unassociated individuals coming together to form this organization that would make this happen. And that is truly what, to me, community is all about.
And we were talking earlier about the store being the hub and the place where people would meet up. And in a different kind of way, the Art Center became that hub. I also remember so many of those events when Myron and Priscilla would walk through the door. They were not the first people at the party, but when their entrance came, not through huge fanfare, but it was a consciousness on just about everybody's part that they had arrived. People would start to file up to say hello and give them hugs and get poked with your dad's cane or whatever it might be.
I got poked a lot. Anyway, Myron also had a knack, you know, doing these shows you were talking about. I used to go with him and help him out, and he would put the dividers up and hang the paintings. He had the perfect knack of hanging a painting square. We're talking, he didn't need a plumb device or a level or anything. They were perfectly aligned. I think I have that knack too, because I go by and I see a painting on our wall that's crooked, and I just, drive me nuts. I got to straighten it out. So that's a trait I'm sure I picked up from him.
I have a question for Robert. What kind of eye did you develop because of being a son of the Grahams, as far as art collecting goes? Any lessons to impart on for us?
I did art myself, but I've reached a certain point where I was unschooled, and I really like movies. I wanted to be a filmmaker, so I went down that avenue. Unfortunately, filmmaking is totally networking. Who do you know, and do you have the right connection? Didn't have it. That's fine. I became a bookkeeper. I'm happy with it, and taking care of two folks for a while.
Is the question, Gail, partly a sense of an awareness on your part of a overall aesthetic as you go about functioning in life, decisions you make, things that you find interesting that you think maybe got shaped by growing up in that household?
Well, I married one of our competitors from Laws. I mean, we have a wonderful 20-plus year relationship going, and I'm her backbone, her critic, her advisor, her technical person, her manager, you know, for getting art going, and she's quite talented in her own. So hopefully I want her to step out a little bit and get some exhibits going, you know. That's for you, Nikki.
The pressure's on.
Subtle, Robert, subtle.
And Gail, you're in framing. Is there the connection directly with Grahams, or is it just that was a store that you loved, but something else clicked later?
No, I think it's obviously has to be the introduction to framing and art was there. That's where I learned that one could actually perhaps even make a living doing something like that. I appreciated the skill involved and the process of the design. I can remember being a little tiny girl and being in the LA County Museum and actually noticing the framing more than the art itself. There's no other explanation for that appreciation than having been exposed to it at Grahams. So I did other things, but I always wanted to be a framer. And I didn't know that Jim Carl had the same desire from an early age to be a picture framer. What is it about that I wanted to do that more than anything? Really, my question to Robert had to do with, I was with my mom and dad when they bought art, when they made the selection, when they interacted with the artist, when they paid for the piece of art. I mean, I was always involved in that process. And that gives us so much maturity when it comes to doing it ourselves as we grow up. And I thought perhaps Robert and Wendy and Peter would have just had their own collections because of that, because I certainly have my own collection, but...
We do. Each of us have a collection. Peter's into a certain kind of style. Wendy's a little more zen. Maybe the oriental thing. I'm more eclectic, you know, I'm a little hippie, more of that natural type guy, but, and we have our stuff.
Your stuff.
Now, I want to make another thing is that our grandfather, his father, had a paint store with glass and that kind of stuff, a big outfit. Myron, Kansas boy, farm city in Wichita and all that, he wanted to go to Chicago, become an architect.
And he worked in Marshall Fields as a window set designer. Christmas scenes and all that kind of thing that's coming up, those little windows, he would learn how to do that. He met my mother, who, of course, her father was a architect. He invented a term called the kitchenette. He studied with Louis Sullivan, who was probably just cut the end of him, and studied with Frank Lloyd Wright. And anyway, these two fell off, got married, 39, and then big WW2 came along, and Myron had to come up the Pendleton, become a Marine. He had two kids. One actually was kind of on the way during his being drafted. My mom, my grandfather died. She had to close up that house and close up their personal house in Decatur, Illinois. Found themselves San Diego, a little side trip up to San Luis, stopped off at Acme Paint Store on Monterey Street and said, you know, after the war, why don't you come and work for me? Well, after the war, Myron and my mom, they moved the family out here, and, you know, the rest is history.
That's actually incredible.
That was another part of Myron and Priscilla, is the fact that they not only supported the arts community, but they collected the arts community. You would go to their house and see this amazing amount of fabulous artwork, and almost all of it was local.
And I know that Gail has one of my pieces as part of her private collection. Three? You have three?
Yes.
Okay.
And if you just tuned in, you're listening to Ears on Art here on KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. Our program today is the second half of a tribute to Myron and Priscilla Graham, a couple whose leadership over several decades did so much to enhance the cultural life here in San Luis Obispo. We rejoin the discussion as Stephen, Kevin O'Connor, and Robert Graham talk about the family art collection.
I mean, it was just astounding that you could walk in and realize that there were levels of artwork being produced within this county that truly are of international level. I mean, they're just hugely brilliant paintings. And that's the part of their collection that I absolutely loved, is the fact that even though they tended to buy pretty much locally, you could tell that the artwork in their house was of incredible quality. And it was a lovely privilege just to walk into their home and to view this.
I think one of the saddest moments that I've had recently was to go to the house after Myron's passing and realize that this collection was about to be dismantled. Mm-hmm.
It's still fairly much intact. We're working on it. We have quite a collection of Elaine Badgley Arnault. Mm-hmm. We're kind of inventorying with her some of these pieces. We have quite a few. Some are personal family portraits. Each one of us in our family has a portrait. I think my brother might have two. But anyway...
My mom has two.
My dad has three. Of course, the famous one, Robert Reynolds, that everybody's been talking about, you know, his back view. We had support a lot of artists. We collected a lot of artists that are no longer here, you know, like Gladys and Stanton Gray, Arnie. We have some Phil Dykes, Phil Faradice, a whole lot of etchings and Howard Bradford and Dorothy Bowman.
There's a lino cut by Jim Carl in your collection also.
You also brought up the fact of how Myron and Priscilla supported the artists in their early years. And I think that's one of the things that was really heartfelt for me, was the fact that Myron would give people the supplies that they needed to create the artwork that they needed to create, without the expectation of payment and remuneration. And he would run these tabs and pay me when you can and things like that. And I don't think many people realize what a positive reinforcement that was to young artists, especially knowing that somebody had that much faith in them, that they could create beautiful artwork. And your father never expected the repayment, and I know that. He would state that outright.
Priscilla sure wanted the payment.
Priscilla wanted the payment.
I
managed to pay all of my bills, I think. I had many, many friends who didn't. They couldn't at the time that they were there. And yet he was just simply incredibly generous with his donations to these people and allowed them to create and to create their own artwork and just said, you know, when you can, pay me. And that was such a huge amount of generosity on his behalf.
That's what we call old school, or in Germany they call Gemeinschaft, Gesellschaft. There's that, you know, the old family store, mom and pop, which mm-hmm. is kind of like a dying breed. Mm-hmm. I sure wish there would be more mom and pop. So I wish San Luis would kind of go back in time to that, but I don't know.
Do any of you have the story of how Myron decided to get into politics and be part of city council, which also changed the configuration of this town?
Actually, the first time that I heard it as an adult, because this was going on while I was still a child, was at the memorial service. And if I'm remembering correctly, because I was fairly overcome with emotion, a large part of that, this was a very early vision for what the town could be at a time when the town suffered a pretty severe lack of vision. A description of San Luis Obispo in the late 50s and early 60s referred to it as a tired place. Mm-hmm. I think as a child, I didn't see it that way. But to contrast photos of the period of downtown with what we have now, and to know that a large part of that is due directly to the efforts of Myron and people that gathered with Myron to see what could be done. William Sloan Coffin talked about the idea of a passion for the possible. And if there's anyone I know who had that, it would be Myron. Because he would look at something and say, well, now, what if we did this? Or what if we tried something here? And he always had an idea for what to try. And it almost always was aesthetically appealing beyond what anybody else was going to come up with. And it usually made good sense. And so to look at a tired downtown and envision a plaza where there was a street, to buck the people who didn't want to do the Mission Plaza because they would lose those 18 parking spaces on the street, to agitate at an early time for more trees downtown in the face of opposition from merchants who didn't want birds defecating on their customers. If you had trees, you'd have birds, and so they didn't want the trees. These were things that were, in their own quiet way, very radical behaviors. And yet, look at us today, the beneficiaries of this sort of forward vision. Can you imagine this town without the Mission Plaza now?
We were very fortunate that we had, with Myron, the instructors at Cal Poly. They had a lot to do with it.
Oh, no question. No question. Ken Schwartz and some of the people who were also visionaries.
It probably wouldn't have happened if Poly wasn't here. I really have my doubts.
I think that's fair. I think there was a synthesis of the resources that a university community brings to bear. Mm-hmm. And it was San Luis Obispo's good fortune that somebody like Myron, who was not involved directly in the university, and yet everywhere you turned, there he was. Or I should say there they were, because Priscilla was an integral part of this. And so you have this incredible synthesis that's more than the sum of the parts. And then these marvelous things happened in their own very quiet, very elegant, very understated way. They were revolutionaries.
And I think that's kind of where this whole honor to Myron and Priscilla is leading us, is the fact that one of the things that is most important about their influence in downtown San Luis Obispo, or in San Luis Obispo in general, was their vision and was their energy and their impetus and how they actually managed to change the town in their oh-so-behind-the-scenes kind of ways. They were very quiet and very methodical about how they had pursued their dreams and how they went about changing downtown San Luis Obispo. And for me, that is the greatest honor that we could possibly place upon them, was the fact that they did alter this city, completely altered this city. in an incredibly positive way.
I think one thing that needs to be mentioned, though, and we haven't necessarily done it entirely well in this discussion this evening, is that both of them were incredibly civil people. Myron could disagree with you more elegantly than anybody I knew, but he always did it so gracefully that it was always a civil disagreement. The last time that I saw him, we went to lunch. And lunch with Myron in his later years was a process where I would sit next to him with a laptop and type in big letters because his hearing had gone to a point where he talked and I typed. And that was the way that we communicated. And he expressed concern more than once about the fact that more gets done when you're civil than when you're not. And he was quintessentially civil. If you watched him in action at the city council, which I got to do, or you watched him in the store, or you watched him in committee meetings, it was very clear sometimes he had a very different idea than what other people had. But I cannot recall a single instance of his being rude to someone. Now, maybe someone else can, but I never saw it.
I can't.
I didn't see rudeness. I saw passion. Again, for me, it was far more often that where I went, they were. There was that sense of, okay, I'm in the right place. The Grahams are here. Robert, a couple of weeks ago, you were commenting on this was a parent that was often racing off because he was going to a meeting someplace.
It was very lively. Myron had a good heart. He was really good with civil rights. When they were starting the Martin Luther King Scholarship Fund and they needed some money, they needed some sponsors, he right away got into it, and that really helped get that off the ground.
Part of my comment was also just what it was to be in the Graham household in the evenings, as either your mother or your father were probably often being pulled off to have to go someplace because their attendance was mandatory because they were on a committee or they were on a board.
Well, truthfully, when I get to it, we kind of felt abandoned as a family, but we knew what he had to do was you just had to live with it, you know, because it's just part of it.
How did they do so much? I think one of the answers, it actually has two parts, and I've thought about this a lot in the last little while. I think the first thing that you could observe is the absence of rancor. These were two very positive people. They didn't put a lot of energy into negativity. So they were very focused on the art of the possible, on the value in each person. For a period of time in high school and in college, I actually worked at the store. I remember watching Myron, and he met people where they were. Now, if I were imprudent enough to make a remark about some of the more difficult customers who came in, and there were some very challenging people, legends in their own mind, if not in ours, Myron would very gently tell me something about that person to help me meet them where they were, while at the same time making it very clear that we didn't necessarily have to leave them there, but we had to meet them there to start. And I don't do that well all the time, but I do it much better than I would have without Myron's influence. And I think that's a great gift from him, perhaps the greatest, to watch him value people that on first glance you might not value. But he would take the time to find out what there was to value about each person. And it goes back to that idea of civility again. And I think that's the secret fuel for a lot of what they accomplished.
And there was the story at the memorial about seeing someone maybe who was sitting outside the store, maybe who had come into the store, but obviously somebody who was not in financially good shape, down on their luck, whatever it was, and telling them to go down the street to Chocolate Soup, a restaurant here at the time, and that lunch would be provided, and just to say, Myron is going to pay you for my lunch. But it certainly speaks to a time, but much more it speaks to a character.
This has always been a place, to borrow St. Bernard's phrase, that in my mind has been kissed by the mouth of God. And although Myron wouldn't have used language that extravagantly religious, he felt in many ways that this was a very special place, and he loved it dearly, as did Priscilla.
I think with that we say thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
And Kevin.
Thank you for including me.
And Gail.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And Robert, for letting us be this much closer to your whole family and what's been given and what will be given.
Well, I think I've been born in San Luis Obispo, and I always treat everybody as my family in San Luis.
We are blessed with those gifts and have been, obviously, for many years. So thank you all. Stephen?
Thank you. Thank you. It's been an honor, actually, placing this sense of importance upon Myron and Priscilla, because they've been a huge sector of San Luis Obispo history.
Our guests today were Kevin O'Connor, Gail Johnson, Jim Carl, and Myron and Priscilla's son, Robert Graham. It is interesting how time passes and things change. We seem to be at a point where we're coming to the end of a generation that has played such a prominent part in the building of this community. We've just been talking about Myron and Priscilla Graham, but a very close friend of theirs, Melba Moe, just died this last week. She and Priscilla both had their degrees in library science, and Melba worked for many years as a librarian for the county schools. She represents the other vital part of any art community, that of the patron. I don't think I ever had the privilege of being in her house, but I can imagine what it must have looked like, because I watched her purchase paintings and pieces of glass, and other objects from galleries. And then there was Melba herself, who always looked as though she had just stepped out of the most elegant hat box anywhere. Not stuck up, just herself. Melba Moe was elegant, gracious, and honest. She may not have been the public persona of the Grahams, but for those who knew her, she certainly left her mark, and I certainly will miss her. Speaking of change, come January, this program, as part of Issues and Ideas, will be moving to 1:30 on the first and second Wednesdays of the month. We have been in this 4:30 time slot for some time and understand that it may not be possible for all of you to follow us to the new 1:30 time slot. Fortunately, it is possible to check us out in the archive section. And of course, if you can listen live at 1:30, that will be terrific too. Stephen and I cannot thank you enough for all of your support, for the fun of having you recognize us by our voices when we're out in public, and for your many compliments. KCBX listeners are special people, and your support of this program has been most gratifying. You have been listening to Ears on Art, produced here at KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. Stephen DeLuque and I, Krista Hewitt, thank you so much for listening.